This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Come back with us, Junkions, to Crystal Lake here on Junk Food Cinema. Man, I really should have like the entire Manfredini score queued up for the entirety of this podcast, because it will drop in about 13 and a half times. This is, of course, the weekly cult and exploitation filmcast that is so good, it just has to be fattening. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, and joining me as per usual, Jesus Christ, Brian, spit the dungaroos out of your mouth and podcast like a professional. He's a screenwriter, he's a novelist, he's a lieutenant of Megaforce, see Robert Carhill.
Hi!
I believe I even meant to say dunkaroos and said dungaroos.
And you know what? This week we are once again joined by a special guest. He is my brother from another mother. He has spent way too many hours on my porch drinking whiskey.
And to analyze a Jason, you have to think like a Jason. So we invited a Jason to join us all the way from Modern Rogue and the closest dive bar. It's author / YouTube gadfly, Mr. Jason Murphy.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Plus TV host.
Yes.
God, he had a whole TV show and everything. Hacking the system. TV.
Yeah, no, Saved by the Bell, the college years. I watched it. It was great.
Sometimes I dress like Screech. I was actually compared to Screech as a kid.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, it was real bad. It was real bad. It was a train wreck.
That is not a dusted diamond. That's
you know what? I'll take that. Everybody always compared me to Tiffany Amber Thiessen.
I still do that.
That is true.
Still trying to fuck Cargill.
If you would like to hear more of this junk food / fic, you can always find us, our back catalog, on iTunes and Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. I'm standing too much on our own promotion. We mentioned you had a TV show. We made a joke about Saved by the Bell. What was the actual TV show that you were on?
Oh, it just got pulled from Netflix.
Oh.
It expired, yeah. But you can still buy it, I think. Hacking the system. Yes, it was basically like Life Hacks, but a little more edgier and a little more criminal.
Brian, a little more sanitized by the network.
Very, 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 very sanitized by the network. The host.
What do you mean we can't teach kids how to build napalm?
Oh, I tried. True story.
I know.
I was actually in a meeting, and I said, "Hey, we should make white phosphorus." And just silence. They just looked at me. And the owner of the production company said, "Why do you even know that?" And I was like, "It's my job. It's why I'm here. It's literally why I'm in this room."
Also, White Phosphorus is my favorite Burt Reynolds movie from the 70s, so I don't understand why they wouldn't let me do it.
That sounds like a movie that should have been made, actually.
Charcoal, cinnamon powder, and aged human urine. I'm probably leaving something out, but those are the ingredients for white phosphorus.
I don't know what you could possibly be leaving out.
I think I'm leaving something out, but whatever.
I love that it's aged human urine.
Yeah. You gotta let it sit for a couple of weeks because of the ammonia.
It's like, that's white phosphorus, and how you make, you know, backyard napalm, you use Jenkum.
You know, I imagine Roy Scheider pouring the urine into a glass haphazardly, and Richard Dreyfuss is like, "Oh, you're gonna want to let that breathe for a little." Okay, never mind.
So what are we talking about this week?
Well, you know, it's really interesting that we kicked this off talking about something that was sanitized by the network, because we're going to talk about a movie that one of the biggest controversies about this film is that it was sanitized by the MPAA.
It is.
My heart.
It does.
It is easily the most made-for-TV Friday the 13th yes. movie of all time.
Closing out our psychic killers, qu'est-ce que c'est? Here at March Madness, it's Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood.
This is the one you've been waiting for.
What's happening to me?
Your psychokinesis and these delusions are...
No, you're not listening to me!
The one you've been asking for.
Concentrate, Tina!
The one you've been dying for. Jason is back. But this time... someone is waiting. Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood.
because the old blood hadn't aged enough to make napalm or some shit like that. I'm not sure.
Not to be confused with The New Beginning.
No, and not to be confused with The Final Friday or The Final Chapter. Or this franchise, much as I love it, much as it's where I cut my teeth in horror to begin with, was very derivative of itself, especially considering how derivative it was of other horror movies when it started out.
At the same time, it also kind of, at times, waffles in and out from episode to episode as to how much it's sticking to its own mythology.
Ooh, yes.
Yes, it does. Not really?
Oh, and here's a problem. We've all seen Friday the 13th Part 6. Those of you listening to this...
This is the only show on the internet where you can say with confidence, now we've all seen Friday the 13th.
Well, we did cover it last summer.
I actually watched it like a month ago.
Yeah.
So. I watched it yesterday.
And does anyone remember what the big deal about 6 is in terms of the mythology? The town changed the name.
Yeah.
From Crystal Lake and was no longer called Crystal Lake.
To Twin Peaks.
What did they change it to? Yeah, I remember. They rebranded, basically.
It was like Green Mountain or something.
Yeah.
It sounded like something you would find on a bottle of water.
Yes, or cheap wine. Yeah. And so it was, and then here, we're just, next movie, we're just going to Crystal Lake. Like, it signs 5 miles to Crystal Lake. Right. Like, you know what? Fuck that whole cool idea we came up with last time. We just want to get back to Crystal Lake.
I'm just mad they didn't bring Tommy back.
But he comes back in flashback.
See, but that is the reason why the movie is called The New Blood, because we have had 3 movies prior to this with Tommy Jarvis being the through line, the Laurie Strode of the Friday the 13th franchise.
Good point. 3 movies is a good run.
It's as many times as Heather Langenkamp showed up in the Nightmare movies.
Screw your franchise.
1, 3, and 7.
New Nightmare.
Oh, that's, of course. Right. Okay. Yeah. So, and then how many times was... Laurie Strode in Halloween film.
Four? Seven. Yeah. And then
a very
H2O.
Brief in, no, she was in Resurrection.
Resurrection.
Very briefly, right. And was killed off in one of the most bullshit cold opens of any horror film of all time.
Yeah. It was pretty bad.
See, this is why I'm so glad you're here, Jason, because we are doing, much like we did in the summer of 86 when we talked about Jason Lives, we are doing a deep dive into this horror franchise, and you are, you know, much like us, one of the big horror aficionados that I know. In fact, the way that you and I met and bonded was at Cargill's wife's birthday party, where we stood up against the wall for like 2 hours until both of our wives made fun of us for flirting with each other, and all we were doing was talking about horror films.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're going to have to be more specific. You gave a lot of details there, but it's like, okay, that narrows it down to about five separate occasions. Yeah.
That narrows it down to every single time we hang out.
Yeah. Well, but going back, speaking of terrible cold opens, let's talk about the first 3 minutes of this movie.
I thought you were going to say, let's restart the episode.
No, which was last week on Friday the 13th.
Oh, yeah, shit. See, I loved it, though, because... it's Walt Gormley giving that narration.
Yes.
It's Crazy Ralph.
Yeah.
Yeah, Crazy Ralph, who this was the last thing he ever did. And this is the last movie in which they do this. And first of all, one of the things that always makes me laugh, if you're a fan of this franchise, you know how much mileage they get out of killing that kid in the wheelchair. That poor bastard dies more than Tom Cruise in Edge of Tomorrow. Every single time a new movie came out, it was like, hey, remember when this disabled kid got it? Well, here it is again in slow motion.
It's like
just
that
to remind you.
In the Kevin Bacon murder.
Yes.
You know, it's like that is over and over and over.
And those aren't even the best murders.
No, but when you slice a kid in a wheelchair in the face, and then on top of that, the added humiliation of the wheelchair falling down steps like he's in a fucking Surf Ninjas gag. Yeah, I reference Surf Ninjas.
I just want Jason to like... I want to see an outtake where he kills the kid in the wheelchair, and then he's like, oh shit, that was a wheel. Oh my God.
I don't have the mask. It cuts off.
I thought it was a rolling chair.
I'm sorry.
Oh,
I thought it was
such an asshole.
I thought it was a wicker chair. Oh, I can't see below my eye line. It's the hockey mask. I'm real sorry. No, in that movie, it would have been a potato sack. So he has even less depth of field going on.
Yeah, because he's only got like... one eye, right? He's only got one functional eye, right?
One functional eye.
Most people don't realize that. Jason's only got like one good eye.
Yes. Okay. Jason's got one good eye and an extra chromosome to kind of balance it out. But the thing that I find funny is that originally this movie was called Jason's Destroyer.
Really?
Yeah. And it started out as the first run at Freddy vs. Jason.
Yes.
Which started to circulate in the mid-80s when both franchises were really, you know, picking up steam. Both of them, no matter what the sequel was, it made money. This one actually came out the same summer as The Dream Master, which was Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4, directed by Rennie Harlan, of all people.
Yeah, like one of his first ones, right?
One of his first movies.
It's where the dog pees fire, and I was like, all right, I'm in.
It's
you got me.
Just, it happens, and we all just had to sit there and watch it happen. But that movie made about three times the amount of money that Part 7 of Friday the 13th made.
It did not do well.
But it was still respectable enough that they were like, yeah, let's make like five more.
Well, the thing is that they were so cheap to make.
Oh, they cost nothing.
They cost nothing because they were hiring, you know, they were pretty much hiring no-name actors for the most part at this point. I mean, throughout the entire thing, because they just needed young, attractive victims. And you shoot in a location in Alabama, and you know you didn't need to.
And it looks dramatically different from the previous Crystal Lake setting.
Yeah, and they cost no money to make at all, and they just were pure profit. So it was very hard not to keep making. I mean, this is why the rights got handed off was because they could not. That Paramount did not, they were embarrassed by the franchise.
There's a reason they tried to end it at 4.
Yeah, because they were like, we're just embarrassed by this. I mean, as we talked about last summer.
They're embarrassed all the way to the bank.
As we talked last summer, when Siskel and Ebert reviewed Part 6, they referred to it as the least offensive entry into the most offensive franchise of all time. Like, critics fucking hated this shit.
Yeah.
Even now, those of us who are hardcore horror nuts that talk about this stuff and review this stuff are still kind of like, yeah, well, you know, I love Friday the 13th.
Yes.
But there's always the but, dot, dot, dot. Which is why I wanted to talk about a couple of these.
Have you guys, like, ever ranked them? On the show?
I don't know that we ever have. Anytime that the date happens to be Friday the 13th, I feel like I tweet it out. And interestingly, I think it changes every time I tweet it, which part of that kind of plays into the fact that when I was watching these movies for the first time, like really getting into horror was, I mean, this was where I cut my teeth. This was the movie I had the strongest feelings about, and they weren't positive. Like, my view of this movie has changed over time.
Really?
When I first saw it, I was not into it, and I couldn't.
How old were you?
I was 12 or 13.
Okay. I saw it when it first hit VHS.
Yeah.
So probably 12 or 13.
Yeah. Right? And it was just one of those things I couldn't articulate. I couldn't put my finger on what it was I didn't like about it. And I think it was recent viewings that kind of made me realize what I didn't like about it as a kid is that it's called The New Blood. Because, as we mentioned before, it delineates a change in protagonist from Tommy Jarvis, who was, you know, Corey Feldman initially, weird mute kid in the fifth one when it was Roy the killer instead of Jason, and then the kid from Return of the Living Dead Friday 6, who did a great job. And so this says New Blood, and it would suggest the idea that Tina is going to be the new protagonist, and she's going to... No. She has one movie, and then that's done.
She's
with
like poor man's January Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Look,
can
we just admit that it's really called The New Blood because we finally got the greatest Jason of all time with
this
Kane Hodder?
Is true.
As far as the guy portraying Jason,
yes,
yeah. Not my favorite incarnation of Jason, but yeah, I mean if you watch the flashback sequence in the beginning where it's like last week on Friday the 13th, like you said, which is hilarious. It shows Jason getting sunk to the bottom of Crystal Lake and then cut to Kane Hodder. And it's like, shit, bro, you lift underwater. It's like, dude's been like, he's like, well, I'm chained up down here. I might as well just like bench this rock a whole bunch because it's like, he makes Jason from Part 6 look just wee in comparison.
Yeah,
because
he really does.
This, I mean, when he comes out of the water for Part 7, he is a beast. I mean, he's like fucking Bane.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And one of the things that bugged me about 7 is that despite the fact that it's called The New Blood and they're making this delineation from Tommy Jarvis, the house that they shoot this in is the exact same house that they shot Part 4. It's the fucking Jarvis house.
Is it really?
The house where all these kids are hanging out is the same fucking house from Part 4.
Huh.
Despite they never make any mention of it. But the nail in the coffin for that character subtly is the fact that they blow that fucking house to smithereens. Like, it is napalmed, speaking of,
yeah,
to the ground. A great stunt.
A great stunt that almost killed, apparently, the entire cast.
Yeah.
Which, you watch that explosion, you're like, yeah, that doesn't look safe. But the other thing I realized, when you're talking about the final chapter in this movie, that really bothered me as a kid, and I didn't realize it until now, the characters are almost exactly the same as the group of kids from
4.
From 4.
Yeah.
Right down to...
Yeah.
Really
formulated.
Right down to Bargain Basement Crispin Glover, who in this movie is the sci-fi writer with the terrible ideas.
I don't know. Star Mummy, I'd watch it.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen Star Mummy.
Yeah, but we have yet to broach the real reason we're talking about this episode this week.
Yes.
Which is the thing that's not like any Friday film you have ever seen. The thing that is actually very different from all the other franchise films at the time. This movie pits Jason against a psychic.
So when Freddy fell out, when they couldn't get the rights to make this Freddy versus Jason, they were still high on the idea of Jason versus something. So they instead tweak the script and make it
Freddy versus Carrie.
Jason versus Carrie.
Yeah.
And it's now like, I have become Carrie, destroyer of Jason. And so they move forward with that idea. And so Tina, who we see in the second cold open of so there's the prologue, and then there's the cold open, and then there's the movie. In the flashback, we see that Tina has psychic abilities because she accidentally kills her abusive father at the beginning of the movie. Hey guys, put a pin in that. It might come back later. And then we jump ahead to the story of her being a grown-up. She's been in an asylum for a while. She's a teenager, and she's going out to Crystal Lake to kind of help work through some of her psychological trauma with Dr. Bernie Corpse.
Yeah, who lives here in Austin.
Terry Kizer lives in Austin?
Yep.
No shit.
Yeah, he's got an acting school here, if I'm not mistaken, or a class or something like that.
Hold on. The guy who got famous for playing an immobile corpse has an acting school.
And which,
good to know.
Had you done your due diligence, he could be sitting here with us right now. How That's amazing true. Would that be? But that just makes me think, I really want I wanted his character to die in the beginning and everyone to do the Weekend at Bernie's thing and Jason just be really perplexed. Like, I killed him like 7 times. And he's still walking around with this goofy grin and sunglasses on.
I feel like that's more of a plot device for a Halloween sequel, just so that Donald Pleasence would be like, okay, seriously, I've killed him 6 times. Wyatt, what? He's on the beach. He's making it with that girl. I don't understand. No, I would actually like to see that. But you know what? If he was here, Cargill would just be asking him a bunch of questions about Mannequin 2 on the move, and we wouldn't get anything done.
This is also true.
Oh, God. Right? I mean, I feel like that's where it would go.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So here's what's interesting about this film. This film is barely a Friday the 13th movie.
Truth.
The predominant portion of this movie is all about this girl dealing with her psychic powers, and it just so happens that the terrible premonition that she's seeing is of Jason showing up and murdering these people next door who she really doesn't give a shit about because they bully her inexplicably anyway.
Yeah, and it should be called Friday the 13th Part 7 : The Afterthought, because that's exactly what Jason is in this movie.
There's a scene that introduces two campers and then kills them by the end of that scene.
Yes, that's Part 6 shit. That is what you do in Part 6. This is the new blood. You're just going to introduce characters to die.
Yeah.
You better call yourself Jason Phipps.
Well, 6, as we talked about, had a sense of humor about itself.
Oh, it was a meta-comedy.
It was a meta-comedy, and as we talked about, that launched a whole series of a whole shift in meta-comedy in horror in the 80s, except for in this episode. Like in 7, 7 doesn't have a sense of humor about itself at all. It is very much a straight narrative that isn't quite in on the fact that it's a joke now. And it creates a very, very weird feeling. Like, it is a movie that almost, like, I see why most Friday fans hate this entry. One of them who might be in the room right now. I don't know who that could be.
Is it your dog? It's your dog, isn't it? Gossamer, do you
Why'd you look at me when you asked about his wife? I mean, podcast.
Because he knew he was
Gossamer. I think
he knew you were going to accuse him of being my wife.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, Cargill, you don't hire the director of Ghoulies 3, Ghoulies Go to College, if you don't want a serious film. John Carl Beekler, who the director of Troll and Dungeon Master.
Dungeon Master.
Which, holy shit, is a film I think I showed at a party one time.
For 20 minutes before we made you shut it off.
Yeah. This was a guy who was far more well-known for his effects work in Stuart Gordon movies, or more specifically in Full Moon movies. Things like...
Oh, yeah.
From Beyond.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely phenomenal. I mean, he did amazing effects.
He's so good at effects, in fact. And the effects are so good in this movie.
Yeah.
The only one we really get to appreciate is the good Jason stuff.
Yeah, because they butchered this film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jason kills about 13 people in this movie, but the only person truly gutted was the actual cut of the film.
Yeah. And the issue here, and I think the biggest problem with this movie and the reason why it is so disliked amongst Friday fans, I like this film, but why I feel like it isn't well liked is because they kind of eschewed one of the tropes of the Friday films, which is to make the kills get more and more creative. What have we not killed a person with? You know, the best kills in every Friday movie, if we were to list our favorite kills, we would not list the goriest ones. We would list the ones that were the most disturbing, messed with us.
What is your favorite kill?
Mine is probably the leather strap around and the tree.
That's a good one.
And it's paired with...
What is that, five?
Yeah, and it's paired with the hedge clippers through the eyes, which is one of my other favorites.
Not only one of the best kills, but happens to the girl with arguably the best breasts of the entire franchise.
A girl...
Which is a separate podcast that you're not allowed to listen to.
A kill, by the way, that a band made an entire video about.
Oh, that's right.
About their sexual awakening. Yeah, but so this doesn't have creative kills. Instead, their idea was, let's just make the kills very realistic. Let's make Jason a very terrifying kind of threat, and they only have one weird kill, which is the party horn.
Yeah, I feel like more than that, it was almost a demo reel for Beekler. Like, the kills in this movie they're not especially creative, but they're really just ghastly to, like, because I've seen
the unedited,
the extended versions of the kills, and it's like,
oh, you have? They're available?
They're online.
I didn't know that.
I mean, you can find, like, terrible VHS rips, because one of the things that, sorry to break your hearts, horror fans, we will never get an extended version of this movie because Paramount had a policy at the time that, you know, shit they cut out of movies like this, that those snippets of film were just
destroyed. And so they've got the dailies of them, and they've got VHS of the dailies. But it's
like when you're like, and the thing that I get it, I absolutely am on board with this movie shouldn't have been edited as much as it was, and I don't know why the MPAA had such a hard-on for Part 7, considering everything that had come before it. But some of the kills, based on what I've seen in the extended footage, when you're killing, like, I don't know, your lead character's mother in a way that, like, literally...
Sonic the Hedgehog?
Yeah, Sonic...
Chaka from Land of the Lost.
Femullet. When you are killing her in a way that she's literally, for 20 seconds, just going... It's like, okay, well, you've kind of ruin the heart of the movie.
What's your favorite kill from the franchise?
Oh, my favorite kill from the franchise is actually in Part 6, and it's the Origami Sheriff, is what I call it, where Jason literally folds the sheriff in half backwards, which, you're right, is not gory. You don't see any blood, but it's creative in the way that they do it.
Yeah, well, and it's you know, it's interesting that, you know, there's one kill in 7 that the extended version would make my top 10 list of best kills in a Friday film.
Is it the sleeping bag?
There's two. Because, the sleeping bag is so much better in the original version because there's 5 hits. They slam her 5 or 6 times into the tree. And it's brutal.
That's how I remember it.
It's only once in the movie.
That is Mandela effect, right?
Yeah.
This is the thing I know.
The second one is when he crushes the guy's head.
Oh, yeah.
The crushing of the head, the extended version of that, is fucking brutal to watch.
And you can tell that it was... You could throughout the whole movie, but one of the ones that I noticed in the rewatch was that kill. You can tell throughout the whole movie that it was just eviscerated because the cuts in this are so abrupt and random. Not even just in the kills.
Yeah.
Mostly in the kills.
There's literally a scene, and I totally agree with this. There's a scene where they're introducing Tina around the party, and Nick says, oh, I see you've met the writer, who... That's one of the other big problems with this movie is whoever decided they knew what these archetypes were. Oh, I know what a stockbroker talks like. I know what a writer talks like. Should have been fired immediately because he'd never met anyone like those people. So after we get done with the writer pitching a terrible story about highly evolved protozoa, Nick says to Tina, don't worry, everyone else here is totally normal. And there is a half a second shot of the stoner. And it's so weird because just like, it's clear he was about to say something.
Yeah.
And then it just cut away. And
yeah,
it's like,
no, that's exactly what I was talking about.
What was that? So yeah, no, it's clear this movie was edited on a sewing machine to get around the MPAA. And that's very problematic. But yeah, that sleeping bag kill, which is iconic to Friday the 13th fans. Like, it is so iconic that they did a version of it in the remake. There's a reason that is one of the few kills mimicked in the remake, because it has that amount of love for it. And in the original version, he slams that bag up against the tree like he's trying to tenderize a piece of meat inside of it over and over and over again.
Which is funny, because if you think about the physics of it, she's in that sleeping bag, he grabs it by the head and then swings it, and it would be like her feet and hips hitting the tree.
Yeah.
But when it opens it up, her head's all bleeding and everything, you know, and it's like, how did that work exactly?
You know,
whatever.
I never thought of that. It's literally ass backwards.
Because you think of the head hitting the tree and everything, it's like, no, that's not, no.
Well, I feel like someone just told me Santa Claus isn't real.
Well, I remember that kill being like 5-6 hits.
Yeah.
No, against the tree, but it's not. It's just one, you know?
It is the, I think, the best kill in this movie because, yeah, that what Cargill was talking about with the character Ben, whose head essentially gets juiced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the best, like, literally compressed with Jason's bare hands. That would have been the best kill in the movie had it not been so savagely cut down.
It reminds me of my favorite kill from 4. Where
I thought you were going to say, it reminds me of my family reunion.
Yeah. My favorite kill from 4, when the guy's in the shower, mm-hmm. and he just puts his hand on the guy's face and just kind of pushes him against the wall. You can hear his head crunch and pop. And
Yeah, there were a few kills throughout the franchise where we get the idea that Jason's, like, mongoloid strength is to an extent that it is just terrifying. Like, when he squeezes... in part 3, when he squeezes the guy's head until his eye pops out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or when he shoves the one girl's head in 6 up against the camper wall until it's just like a TV tray.
Right, right.
But yeah.
No, was 6 where he smashed somebody's face into the tree and then there was a smiley face when you pulled
away? Yes, that was one of the paintballers, in fact. And it also has one of my favorite kills, which is the triple beheading of the other paintballers.
Right.
Which also got gutted by censors.
It did. It very much did. And Beekler, to this day, has a real... chip on his shoulder, and rightfully so, about what the MPAA did to this movie. And again, it makes no sense to me considering everything we'd seen
this is let's hop in the Wayback Machine and talk about what we were talking about last summer, which is keep in mind this is 1987. we have just started on an upswing of conservatism again. Mm. At this very time, you have Tipper Gore crusading to limit violence and sex in movies and to prohibit sales of albums with offensive material to minors. So she starts the PMRC. Is it the PMRC? Is that what it's...
Something like that. I can't remember the exact acronym.
I'm blanking because now I want to say...
I believe it's YMCA.
I keep wanting to say PCMR, which is the PC Master Race, to which I belong.
Whoa, what?
Yeah.
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 Wait, is that different from the like actual Master Race?
Yes, yes. It's
all
the
right, Bannon, we're, didn't know it's, where we were drawing the
it's
line.
PC Master Race are people who are far superior to their console plebe God, what's the peasants who play on their consoles with their limited RAM and their limited processors.
I'm primarily PS4, and Cargill said that I should not have the ability to vote.
Yes. Oh, I see.
Okay. That's yeah. the yes.
Well, he does. His internet pseudonym is Jack Boot. So,
so we've got this time where there's a lot of pushback all of a sudden in Hollywood, and Hollywood, of course, needs to regulate itself to prevent legislation from regulating them and going back to, you know, the era of like the Hays Code and things like that. So you've got some very real pushback happening in all sectors of entertainment at this time. And so taking one of the most despicable violent franchises in Hollywood, one that was a huge target and was sending a message to Hollywood. Now, of course, at the same time, we would then have other movies that would push the envelope and get away with it. Like, what surprises me is how gutted this was. And yet RoboCop shortly after did not face that much.
RoboCop was the year prior to this, but the year after Part 6. So it may be part of the reason leading up to this that it was so gutted. Because, yeah, you're right. Verhoeven got away with a shit ton in that movie. But I want to go back real quick to Kane Hodder, who is introduced in this movie as Jason for the first time and would play him all the way through Jason X. There's a reason this guy played Jason for many years, and it's for the first time, you had an actor who was a stuntman as well, but who could deliver a performance through the mask and through the makeup, whereas everybody else, like, it seemed like the scope of their interpretation of Jason was, I'm lumbering, I'm killing. I'm lumbering, and I'm killing. I'm jumping through a window, and I'm dead.
No villain in history, no actor in history strikes a silent, still pose like Kane Hodder does.
That's
like
true.
Kane Hodder stands there and is menacing just by fucking standing there in the way he's holding himself.
That's very true.
And how many movies has there been since that he has not played Jason? Just two?
The remake, which
and Freddy vs. Jason.
And Freddy vs. Jason, I don't understand why they didn't call him.
Yeah. That was Ken Kersinger?
Apparently, the idea was they wanted someone who could tower over Freddy. And I'm like, I've seen Robert Englund. And I've seen Kane Hodder.
I have had a conversation with both of them standing together. Like, I have been in the room with
Hey, Cargill, was it hard to tell who was taller in that situation?
It really fucking wasn't.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
And no disrespect to Derek Mears, who I think does a fantastic job in the remake. And in fact, I remember during the Q&A when they showed that Austin talked about a big part of his training for that was Greek mask acting. And I'm like, yeah, you get it. Like, you have to actually turn in a performance. It's not enough to be big and wearing that mask.
I think the remake is the best Friday film.
It's so good.
Yeah, no, you're in a room full of people. You don't need to say that. This goes back to what I'm talking about and what's so weird and what I love about this movie is Friday the 13th is a series that never knew what the fuck it wanted to be. Like, it is the most all over the map. It's like one of the things we talked about last summer, the fact that it's the only series with a villain in which three of the entries doesn't actually have the villain.
Oh, and not only that.
Oh, wow.
It's
yeah.
the only franchise.
1, 5, and 9.
Yeah.
Like, he blows up at the beginning of the 9.
Yeah.
And the rest of the movie is this worm creature. Like,
yeah.
He's not in three of the movies.
Which, by the way, Jason goes to hell. Go fuck yourself to hell. To this day, I will never
forget that. Jason did, in fact, go to hell. And so did the audience.
So did that franchise. No, but one of the things that's also weird about the franchise is it's the only one to do all of the "we're running out of ideas" Hail Marys.
Oh, yeah.
Going to space.
Yep.
I want your baby / I want to be reborn through you.
Oh,
and of course,
yeah.
3D. Other franchises do one, maybe two. This is the only one that's done.
The trifecta.
The trifecta.
And
we've run out of ideas.
And they invented another one versus a psychic.
Yes, versus a psychic.
So here's the thing, is as a Friday film, this is one of the weakest entries of a Friday film.
And I think that's what 12-year-old me was so pissed off about, is that Jason isn't, the name Jason isn't even mentioned for 58 minutes.
But the last 12 minutes of this movie is why you watch this movie. Because all of a sudden, he, this psychic whose psychic powers are triggered by tension and frustration, is scared to fucking death by Jason and just starts throwing every bitch throws a couch at him. She drops a porch on him. She throws, she chokes him from the light cord.
Yeah.
Drops him through the house into the basement.
Kane Hodder really took a lot of abuse for his first outing as Jason.
He almost died a couple of times.
Dude.
Yes, true story.
He also, for a long time, held the, he set and he held the record for longest sustained burn on screen at 41 seconds.
Oh, 41 seconds, that's right. In fact, this, we talked about part six being a tongue-in-cheek meta-comedy. Part seven is Maniac Cop 2.
It's a certain degree, yeah.
Stunt horror film.
Yeah.
And not just the fire, but like there was a scene where he falls through a set of stairs.
Yeah.
And apparently one of them wasn't false, and they basically miscalculated to where his head nearly hit one of the real stairs on the way down and could have fucking put him in the hospital at the very least.
But he's Kane fucking Hodder.
He's the guy who showed up to set with a scar, which obviously he still has, across his neck and chest from a previous time he was set on fire for a movie and nearly burned to death.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy that he kept doing it.
Kane Hodder is who he is because he was so nuts as a stuntman, willing to do stuff that most other people wouldn't do and getting amazing shots out of it. And that's what really works here. This Jason is a interesting Jason. The makeup work is amazing.
Oh, I love that like weird like part of his jaw that's exposed.
Yeah.
I love that.
This is my least favorite incarnation. No, not my least favorite, but close to my least favorite.
It's not Worm Jason.
I'm not a big fan of Super Zombie Jason.
Really?
I like disfigured.
You're not a fan of post five.
Yeah, I like disfigured hillbilly Jason. Yeah,
I will thank you to leave now. No.
No, my favorite Jason is probably
Mama's Little Mongoloid.
Is three.
Oh.
Or four, you know. Three or four.
Four is good, too, because four is, similar to this, a movie in which Jason takes a shit ton of punishment.
Yeah, and I have a actual, like, huge soft spot for two.
Yeah.
You know.
With the potato sack?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you don't get much more hillbilly than, I live in a shack in the woods with my mother's skull and sweater, and I wear a potato sack.
Yeah. But, no, that's... Sometimes I vacillate, but sometimes I think, no, two might actually be my favorite because something, it still is very unnerving to me when in two, we find the place where Jason poops. And that just bothered me as a kid because that guy goes into the trailer, into the shack, the shanty, and there's a toilet in there. And I'm like,
you know what? The thing that's killing me is somewhere out there, Sean S. Cunningham is going, shit, that was the title we never went to. Like, that's the last place we've not taken Jason.
Even Jason Poops.
Or Jason Poops.
That's the children's book I'm actually working on from when my son is born.
Every Jason Poops?
Yes. Yeah, no.
But yeah, whenever they find that toilet, I was just like, It still kind of creeps me out because I'm like, oh yeah, he's not some just entity, some weird thing. He's kind of human, but then after five, he's not.
Yeah,
you know,
because once he gets resurrected in six, he's zombie Jason, and that's where the game changes.
Yeah. I feel like that's when I love him more. It's so weird. I have the exact opposite reaction. Like, I am so much more a fan of zombie Jason than I am of crazy hillbilly Jason.
And most people, that's what's so weird. One of the many weird things about this franchise is everybody remembers Jason as being a zombie, but he's only a zombie in half the movies. Like, he doesn't become a zombie until six. And, you know, up until that point, he was just a dude. Yeah.
So, sidetrack, I have played the beta for the Friday the 13th.
I know you have.
Yeah, we talked about it.
Oh, yes.
I think. Yeah, it's awesome.
Six is where it kind of actually you can see, or seven rather, is where you can kind of see where they borrowed some of those rules from.
Yeah. So
in the game, just to give you guys an overview of how it plays.
Because it's Jason Murphy, and he can't not talk about video games.
Yeah, of course. there are, you've got, it's online, it's all multiplayer. There are like five or six people who play, you all sign in, five or six people play the campers, and then one person is randomly selected to be Jason. And the campers are trying to escape or kill Jason, and Jason's trying to kill all the campers. And it's a lot of fun. It's very, very tense. But one of the cool things about it is you can play as different Jasons, but you have to unlock them. And I'm pretty sure the beta started off with like three, if I remember correctly, where you play as Jason from Friday the 13th Part 3. And he looks just like he does in the movie, but he's got certain stats, mm-hmm. like how fast he moves, how strong he is, how much punishment he can take, what kind of special kills he has, et cetera, et cetera. And at one point, I had played the beta enough that I unlocked Jason from Part 7.
Ooh.
And he was a little different. He played a little differently. He certainly looked different. You could see the spine, you know, as he's walking along. You could see his spine in his back. But the cool thing is, Jason from 7 moved really quickly underwater, whereas Jason from 3 did not. And so his abilities and powers were different based on all of the behaviors you see in the movie.
Well, and like in 7, which has no geography whatsoever, he just teleports all over the fucking place.
Well, they all do. All of the Jasons.
If you play as the Jason from the remake, you're really good at tunneling. You're basically the Viet Cong Jason.
You're Charles Bronson. You're just in the Great Escape.
Just digging tunnels. But I want to speak to something, Jason. I feel like I understand part of what you're saying about not liking this iteration of Jason, because one of the other things that Beekler complained about is that he was butting heads a lot with one of the executive producers on this film, a woman named Barbara Sachs. And he said one of the things that Barbara hated and tried to remove from the film was the idea of showing Jason without his mask, which Beekler basically has him unmasked for about, I don't know, 15 minutes of the movie during the whole final confrontation with Tina. Frankly, I'm on Barbara's side because I don't understand the need to show Jason without his mask on unless you're just stroking yourself like, look at the makeup effects I can do. And no, it's like, but that's not really relevant to the character.
That's the one thing that I always look forward to in all of the Friday the 13th films is the moment when Jason is unmasked.
The moment.
Right. So, yes, he does not need to be exposed the whole time. Plus, as far as like character goes, he's disfigured and he's ashamed of it. You know, I mean, that's what it is. Yeah. And it needs to, that's the whole thing, that build up and what does he look like now? You know, and I know it was silly, but I was so into that as a kid. And so when he takes his mask off, it's just like, oh my God. And every time it was always something that I looked forward to. And even when it was barely shown, like in 2, when he jumps through the window or something like that, it was always something that I anticipated.
Right.
So showing him without his mask off for most of the movie. No,
it's like the shark had worked and you saw it all throughout Jaws. It's
right.
Like, that actually takes away from it. And when you actually see what Jason looks like without his mask in this one, I kept waiting for Rita Repulsa to show up and make him grow to 100 feet because he looks like a goddamn Power Rangers villain. I don't need that.
Actually really like the look of this
Jason.
You like
Frogman Jason?
I do.
Okay.
Dude, this flesh looked... you know, one of the other things I really liked about the look of this Jason is he's still wet from the water. Like,
that's
he's
very true.
Soaking wet.
Yeah.
And he stays soaking wet. And just to... I love the design of that face. Like, I just do. I like the look of this. But I particularly like the end of this movie. I love watching this psychic, like, knock around Jason and throw him around. And it's a real interesting fight. Because it's the only interesting violence that really happens in the movie.
That's true. And I think it's because all of the other kills were cut down so much that I think you hit the nail on the head, which you wouldn't be able to see in this movie, in that this feels like the already cut for TV version of The New Blood.
Yeah.
Because so much of it is just like, one of my
what should have been one of the most satisfying kills in the movie is when the prototype bitch character, Melissa, gets an axe in the face and then gets thrown across the room over the TV.
Because yeah.
It's not just the axe. It's the, like, disrespectful, like, and fuck your corpse. Not literally, because Jason is really more of a kill-em than a diddle-em, but you know what I'm saying.
It's so, it in that direction of fuck your corpse.
and a jumping off point, apparently.
So, I follow a lot of, like, horror accounts
on... I was really curious as to where that sentence was
going. On Instagram. And there's a subsection, because of course there is, of...
We call them subspecies.
People... That is also correct, I think, of people who sexualize Jason Voorhees.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, people posting pictures of Jason having sex with a girl, and they're like, oh my God, this is so hot.
Okay, so...
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa. Wait, Rule 34 is shocking you right now?
No. I know, right?
Let this be another horrible segue into another edition of hashtag Unfiltered Fiance, because when I was watching this at the apartment... One of the, like, out of the other room, she came and sat down. I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. This is not her type of movie at all. And this was toward the end. First thing she asks me, does Jason rape the girls or does he just kill them? And I was like, no, he's more of a murderer than a diddler.
Wow.
And because she didn't know. And it's like all the shit that she watches is like SVU and like those.
She didn't know. And yet you still proposed marriage to her.
I know.
Weird.
I get it.
Weird. I mean, no, I'm not faulting you. I'm just saying it's unexpected.
My decisions become more dubious when the next thing she asked was like, or the next thing she said, which I thought was hilarious, was like,
will you wear the mask?
Yeah. Why won't he die? He just keeps coming back. That's really frustrating.
Well, that's... Okay, so...
It's like, yes, it is!
So, story from my youth. You guys have all probably played it Friday the 13th on the NES.
Right? Well, speaking of frustrating.
Yeah. It was an extraordinarily hard game, because back then, all games were hard, but this one was particularly hard. I played it a lot, of course, because it was me. As a kid, I was obsessed with Nintendo. I was obsessed with horror movies, particularly Freddy and Jason. And then one time...
And your friends are dead.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I killed Jason. And I was just like, yeah, yeah! And then he came back to life. And I was like, what? And then I felt stupid for being caught off guard that he came back to life.
Yeah.
And then he kicked my ass. You got to kill him like 3 times. But I was just like... Oh, you have learned nothing, you dumb son of a bitch. Of course he comes back to life.
I'm going to set the scene. Jason sitting on a big stack of weathered Fango editions.
Accurate.
Drinking the half-empty bottle of Jolt Cola right next to him.
So you were telling me earlier that there is a controversy surrounding this.
This is something I only found out about while watching. If you guys have not seen Crystal Lake Memories... which is the documentary that literally goes movie by movie. And you go into the one on The New Blood, one of the things that they mention is the character that I was talking about before, Melissa, Susan Jennifer Sullivan is the name of the actress. They refer to her in the documentary as the late Susan Jennifer Sullivan. And I was like, oh, that's really sad. She was obviously very young.
Oh, she just didn't show up on time.
She didn't show up on time. But then I went to IMDb and they don't have a death date listed for her. But in this part with her spouse, it's like she was married to this person up until her death.
Some say she's still out there.
Seriously, it gets weirder to that degree. Because then I start Googling this and looking around. There are forums that have posted her obituary, but the obituary does not mention her acting and has her listed under a different last name. And if you read the forums, there are people adamantly claiming that she's still alive. One person in one forum was claiming like, no, I'm her daughter. She is totally still alive. And it's so weird to me that in this age where you have IMDb and every actor in every movie is cataloged. Like literally, I was watching a Mystery Science Theater movie. I looked up on IMDb the actors in this Mystery Science Theater movie from the 50s and found out one of them died by falling out of a window. Like, you can find information on anybody and anything.
Yeah.
And this woman has apparently vanished from the face of the earth to the fact that her death is being disputed.
It would be solved really quickly if anyone gave a shit.
I
give a shit. This is weird to me.
No, I'm seriously curious now, actually.
No, I mean,
I'm really curious. I didn't know about this.
Yeah, no, it's probably one of those cases that if she's still alive, she's not particularly proud of her acting career.
Sure.
She doesn't want to have anything to do with it. She, you know, her name's changed and was changed after she got married and lives in a, you know, happened in a pre-internet sort of thing. So confusion happens and, you know, maybe she was remarried.
I would love to see like some interviews, like some Maury Povich style stuff.
Oh, no, no.
Hello, you know, going to like the suburbs or a small town in Georgia or something like that. And it's like, hey, we understand that you appeared naked in a Friday the 13th film. And that's just like an entire daytime talk show of finding people that appeared naked in Friday the 13th.
You don't
films.
Understand. This is my searching for Sugar Man. I have got to find this actress and find out if she's still alive because it bothers me that I don't know. I don't know why it bothers me, but like this franchise was so huge to me growing up.
This is your Zodiac.
This is my Zodiac. The writing's on the wall, guys, and it needs to be decrypted. That's all I'm saying. The other interesting thing about this, as we mentioned with our discussion on Jason Lives, is the timeline. The timeline of this franchise gets real fucking weird because of Tommy Jarvis. Because in Friday the 13th Part 4, he is a 12-year-old kid played by Corey Feldman.
Yep.
And that takes place in quote-unquote real time, so it's 1984. From that point, we watch Tommy age. And as this franchise goes forward, one of the other things I learned from Crystal Lake Memories is that in Part 7, when the main events of Part 7 take place, Jason has been underwater for 10 years.
Yeah.
So I did some fucking research on every Friday the 13th from about 1984 to 2001. And at the beginning of this movie, in the flashback sequence, we see that it is Friday, October 13th. Considering what we know of the franchise, I figured out that that has to be Friday the 13th, 1991. And that when we jump forward another 10 years, this movie takes place in September of 2001. So it's fucking weird. This is what 2001 looked like, apparently.
Jason Voorhees can melt steel beams.
All I'm saying is we need to look at all the reports because Jason's probably a reptilian. Have you seen his face under that mask? I'm just saying.
Oh, God.
Jason turned all the frogs gay.
Jason turned all the... Speaking of gay!
I'm sorry.
Did I
give you another segue?
Jason Gate. Yes. The other weird thing about this particular entry is that while they were filming it, apparently they referred to it as Fry Gay the 13th Part 7, because a number of the actors in the movie, both male and female, were gay, which was somewhat known to the production staff and somewhat not known, which is only interesting because they're all playing hetero characters.
They're all playing hetero stereotypes.
They're all playing hetero stereotypes who literally at one point in the movie, the house that they're all in becomes just like a shaggin' wagon, where Jason literally has
like,
a scene.
Everyone is fucking.
In every room. And there's
everyone
a scene.
That's alive is
yes.
fucking.
Yeah. And there's a scene where Jason walks up to the house and looks up as if he can smell fornication. It's like, oh, people are doing it in there. All right, I'm going in. And that's what happens.
And they're all, and the thing is, it's all, every couple, you go from room to room, it's all boring missionary.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, how else are you going to drive a spike through two people if they're not doing it missionary?
He doesn't do that, though.
He doesn't do that in this one. That's
no, this true. One, again, the kills... The kills are boring. Like every kill is let me lure someone away to get them alone. And then I will kill one person and then kill the other. And in really boring ways that will look great.
Yeah. Fantastically boring ways.
I want to see like Jason walk into like some really bizarre sexual scenario and then just slowly back out of the room.
Like, oh, you can put what where? I'm out. Just slowly back into the shadows, doesn't say anything.
Yeah. Sorry, Alabama Hot Pockets, where I draw my line.
Well, they are in Alabama filming this movie.
Yes,
it's
they
entirely
are.
Entirely possible. That is not going to be the junk food pairing.
Alabama
just in case you were
Hot Pocket.
Hot Pocket.
Disgusting.
Whatever you do, do not Google Alabama Hot Pocket.
You will not.
Do not Google Alabama Hot Pocket.
You have now ensured that everyone will Google the Alabama
that Hot Pocket. Is actually rule 35. If you tell people not to Google Alabama Hot Pocket, they will definitely Google Alabama Hot Pocket. But yes, the
show. But don't Google it.
Don't do it. Don't do it. the showdown with Jason at the end of the movie, I think, is the big draw of this film. And watching her literally like throw nails at him, throw couches at him, set him on fire, knock him through the floorboards, because even the final girls of the Friday the 13th franchise have been very, very passive, very, you know, they're victims. Like, this is the first time we've really seen a character fight back like this. And then really, when you think about it, the only time since that we would see this, it's really not a tentpole. It's really not a calling card of the franchise.
No.
And this leads up to what I refer to as Deus Ex Stepdad, which is where Jason comes back from his supposed fiery death. He is on the docks with her. It looks like he's about to kill her. And the dad that she accidentally murdered with her psychic powers at the beginning of the movie pops up from the lake, grabs Jason, drags him down the end.
I wish it was more Deus Ex My Two Dads.
Well, let's be fair.
Paul Reiser just shows up.
Paul Reiser versus Jason is a movie that I would watch.
Yeah.
But Paul Reiser and Greg Evigan versus Jason.
Wow.
I'm in.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah. Captain Deep Cut over here.
Make sure you come up slowly from that deep dive or you will get the bends.
That's his name, right?
I have to trust you on that because no one else fucking knows that. That guy you mentioned, his agent doesn't know that. That's all I'm saying. And if you put Paul Reiser in a movie like this, he's just going to try and freeze Jason and make money off of him later, which is really the plot of Jason X. So, which makes sense because this is 2001 according to the timeline, and that's when that movie was released. But I don't want to get too
even though it's
up in
very,
things.
Very, very, very 1987.
Yes.
Also, someone hire Todd Farmer.
Just saying. But apparently, this is another point of contention with the movie is that the animatronic they were going to use for 10 years under the water, abusive dad. Was thrown out at the 11th hour, and instead you have what Beekler refers to as the actor in dirty face popping up out of the water, grabbing Jason, pulling him down. The movie abruptly ends at that point, to the point where I was like, oh, well, maybe this is another situation where, because of the editing, because of the MPAA, this is probably why they cut it. Turns out, apparently the reason this movie ends so abruptly is because of Fatal Attraction?
Wait, what?
Yeah, no, this is something I just learned.
Yeah, because they cut the final scene of this movie.
The final scene was going to be Jason pops up out of the water like a day or two later and kills two random fishermen just to show that he's not dead. But Fatal Attraction had just hit and was such a huge success. And if you remember, the end of Fatal Attraction has that one final scare. So the final scare, which was such a token part of slasher franchises, suddenly was too mainstream. Suddenly it was like, oh, everybody's going to think we just ripped off Fatal Attraction, even though we've been doing this for years. So they cut that
because
scene.
You know what we care about? What the critics think.
Because when I think slasher heroes, the first person I think of is Michael goddamn Douglas. So we can't have that association tainting the memory of the new blood. I don't understand.
I kind of want to see Jason take his mask off and it's Glenn Close.
Holy shit.
It's
holy shit.
It's so weird to think about, though, that, you know, you have Six, which is a comedy, and then this becomes so serious.
Yeah.
And the studio tries to take it seriously in a number of regards. And then they just throw that all out with the bathwater with Eight and just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
And makes what is arguably one of the worst entries into the franchise.
And Cargill, I'm so glad you brought up the next one because it throws the fucking timeline theory off too.
Yeah.
Because according to this timeline, that should be about 2002, 2003, but there's a fucking ad for Tim Burton's Batman in Times Square. That doesn't make sense.
And you can probably see the World Trade Center at some point.
Yeah, more than likely. Which I totally fault the filmmakers for that. But you know what? Unless, here's an even crazier theory. Maybe Jason, That happens prior to the new blood. Like, that's the thing that releases him from the water before he battles Tina. So it's about 1990. Although, yeah, no, that would line up, I guess. But again, that's getting real crazy. And then how did he get back in the lake? And you're getting Alex Jones at that point again.
I have a question about that, though. Who fucking cares?
I care! Is she alive or dead? This is my sugar man!
There goes the neighborhood.
Which brings us to the junk food pairing, obviously, in the angriest fashion imaginable. I had a couple of ideas for this. One of them being delicious pigs in a blanket to commemorate the greatest kill in the entire movie. But then I had another thought. And Jason, you may be the second guest
to have to endure a live tasting of the junk food pairing.
Oh, bring
it. The first being Joe Lynch. Jason Voorhees has been at the bottom of Crystal Lake for about 10 years. So the mind, you know, obviously goes to he's very wet, as Cargill imagined. He probably smells very moldy. Probably a very disagreeable scent and flavor to him.
Yep.
Then I remembered that there was a case of beer in the trunk of my car that had been there since January and probably tastes a lot like Jason would smell coming out of that swamp after 10 years. So I'm going to take the first sip of this Shiner Bock that has been in the trunk of my car since January.
Awesome.
To get a good sense
I'll drive you to the hospital.
To get a good sense of what Crystal Lake probably tastes like. And if you would like to join me, you are welcome to.
I'm not doing that shit, man. No.
I don't
blame you. There's plenty of good alcohol in this house.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. Who would stock so much good alcohol in their house?
There's so much good alcohol.
Don't worry, Cargo won't
house.
Do it. He manages to sidestep this every time.
I'm not doing
you,
that.
You're the one that... Dude, I am on a special diet, and you keep bringing things I can't eat.
Special diet called none of Brian's bullshit.
I mean, I don't care how it tastes, whatever, but I don't want to die. I don't want to die because I was on.
Who makes napalm in his garage for fun.
Yeah, you can't hide behind that excuse, sir. I've watched you the things I've watched you do on Modern Rogue.
We just talked about this last week. You're the goddamn Timmy from the dinosaurs version of Mr. Wizard, where it's like. Brian Brushwood's getting behind the lead shield, and you're like, sure, I'll play with the bomb.
Looks like
why
we need
not?
Another Jason.
We're going to need another Jason.
Brian's, like, super careful on Modern Rogue, and I'm just like, yeah, whatever, light it. Just fucking do it. I'll hold it. Fine. Just do it. Let's go.
All right.
Like, you're going to be shitting your guts out for, like, a week.
Which was actually another kill that was cut out of the movie. So here's to swimming with bow-legged women.
Probably fine, right? You probably can't even taste the difference. January? It's fine.
It's not terrible.
I got a Lone Star in my truck that's been in there since December.
Are you win? Question mark? No, that's not as swampy as I thought it would be, considering it's been an especially humid winter, but it's not ideal. It's certainly...
Somewhere Jason Voorhees is like, that's been marinating around my balls.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like the perfect snack food pairing for...
After I do this, you've got a better one. Thank you.
Good. Well, you're welcome. You set out to drink a shitty beer. I didn't fucking voice that upon you.
It's a boiled beef jerky.
No. You know what this movie is? This movie is that grocery store party tray. It's got... all of the typical cheeses,
yeah.
All of the typical meats. There's nothing really super special about any of the things together, but it is a party tray and you'll still fucking eat it. And it's just fine for what it is. But it's certainly not going to be the best thing you eat today.
And if you manage to make it through the party that serves that, you wake up the next morning and you're wanting something for breakfast, you have a big bowl of Crispix Glover, which is the stand-in Crispin Glover from this movie, who I imagine was Cargill in high school. Like, did you get that vibe watching this movie, Murphy, where it was like he would stop people and be like, what do you think of Starlicon?
He wasn't weird enough.
Oh, wait, no, it'd be like, no. Let me tell you what you need to understand about Starlicon. Is that more probably the cargo voice? Here's what you don't understand about Starlicon is the protozoa are actually a metaphor for the Vietnam War. That's probably more. I just imagine of all the characters in the movie, that was probably most like cargo.
Why has it been so long since we've had a Friday film?
That's a good fucking question.
Because they haven't been able to get it off the ground. I mean, those franchises have not connected. They tried relaunching all of them over a couple year period, and none of them really took. Like, Chainsaw had done so well that they're like, of course, we've got to relaunch all of these. And none of them took off.
And the Chainsaw sequel has been, or prequel, or whatever the hell it is, has been done for a long time and still doesn't even have a release date.
I have heard interesting stories on that. There's like two cuts of that movie.
I have heard, the only story I've heard that is that it's really, really good. But I don't know what cut that is.
It would be a change of pace from the last one, which I was actually on set for and knew from watching what was being filmed, it was going to be really, really bad.
I just, you know, get at me, New Line. Let's do it.
Oh, awesome.
Let's do it.
Friday, the thing is I feel like so many people disliked the Friday remake. We are not among them.
It's the best movie of the entire franchise.
It takes all of the best ideas of Friday and puts them together in one movie.
It combines two and three perfectly.
Yeah, it is the essence of Friday. Like that is just it captures everything great with none of the bullshit.
Especially since the first two victims are Ice Cube and Chris Tucker. I mean, it gets Friday perfect.
It had solid casting. It had some decent ideas in it, some good kills. It was atmospheric. I liked it a lot.
And I really do think Derek Mears is a really fantastic Jason Voorhees, not to mention the fact that the next one would literally be the 13th entry in the franchise. How have they not put this together already?
Every few months, they say, okay, well, here's what's going on. There's an announcement. Here's what's going on with the new Friday the 13th. And then a few months later, you hear, that's not happening. Then they do it again. I mean, there was like a found footage one, and then there was a relaunch, and just et cetera, et cetera. They're jerking their chain.
Apparently, Voorhees is an old Dutch word that means cock tease. So that's something you learned on this podcast. Jason, speaking of this podcast and other things people do on the internet, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter, @CaptainMurphy. I have a Facebook page that I never update. I have a website that I also never update, jasonsmurphy.com. And I'm on the Modern Rogue, and I have a book called The Black Goat Motorcycle Club on Amazon.
Why don't you tell these junk food junkies what your book is about, because it was bold at the middle for them.
Yeah, it's about a bunch of people trapped in a remote hospital in Arizona, and then a gang of psychotic bikers show up at trying to get at some sort of mysterious crate that a rogue FBI agent is hiding within the hospital, and then shit gets really weird and super violent.
And supernatural.
And pulpy delicious.
And supernatural, yes. You will find it very reminiscent of other things that you love if you listen to this podcast.
Yeah, highly recommend it.
I'm surprised you didn't give the soft pitch on that. Like that, do you really play it that close to the chest?
I do, yeah. Right. Yeah. I do.
Turns out it's Transformers the movie from the 80s, but as a supernatural thriller.
I wasn't playing it safe with that until I was talking to people who had read like half of the book, and then they realized, and I spoiled it for them, and they were like, "Wait, what?" And I said, "Oh, you didn't know. You didn't figure out.
Oh, you didn't know.
You didn't figure out the big twist. I thought it was super obvious, but apparently
what
it's
not. A twist."
Yeah,
I mean it's no M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, no.
And plants killing people. But, yeah, but it is a twist.
It's one of those where it's like
Vin Diesel showing up at the end of the movie.
Whoa! Fucking mark your calendars for an Alamo mode when that goddamn movie comes out, because holy shit, people have just screened Fate of the Furious in Las Vegas, and I'm so jealous of them. It's going to happen. This beer, by the way, halfway down got worse. I don't know why I'm still drinking it. But yes, so look up Murphy and all of his various endeavors. Cargo, where can people find you on the internet?
Also on Twitter, @MassaWorm, MassaWyrm, and on Facebook, facebook.com/MassaWorm.
Or Recumbent Cargill on his couch, if you want to find him there as well.
I got a horror movie called 200 Hours that'll be out sometime this year, so watch for that.
It's where James Franco cuts off the arm, but then eats it and decides that he's a cannibal.
God damn it, I told them that people were going to make that joke.
Sorry.
I told them.
Sorry. He's playing the twist close to the vest, and I just
spoiled. That's okay. I have a movie out as well. It's available on Blu-ray right now. You may have heard of it. It's called Dr. Strange.
Sinister 2.
Oh, Dr. Strange. It's called Megaforce: The Next Generation, and it's
shot in Cargill's backyard.
I want to make a Megaforce movie so bad.
It was shot on VHS.
It's basically just Cargill doing wheelies up and down.
He has the uniform. He's just shooting himself wearing it.
It's Cargill doing wheelies up and down his block, shooting bottle rockets off of the handlebars.
I don't remember Ace
and
Hunter
singing Flowbots by Handlebars, because he always does that.
Well, yeah, and I don't remember Ace Hunter having a codpiece, but Cargill does in the movie for some reason. Speaking of cod pieces, you can find me on Twitter at Brian Guy Salisbury or on Facebook, facebook.com/BrianSalisburyCritic. And we will be back next week with more smelly things from Crystal Lake, or, I don't know, a better line to go out on that I'll edit in later.